The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde. Retold by F. H. Cornish. Published by Macmillan Education, a division of Macmillan Publishers Limited, 2011. Act 1. Lane, have you made the cucumber sandwiches for Lady Bracknell's tea?
Yes, sir.
Oh, by the way, Lane, I looked at your notebook. I noticed that when Lord Shoreman and Mr. Worthing dined with me on Thursday night, 8 bottles of champagne were drunk.
Yes, sir, 8 bottles.
Why is it that in a bachelor's home the servants always drink the champagne? I just ask because I'm interested, Lane.
I think that it is because the champagne is better in a bachelor's home. I have noticed that the champagne in married people's homes is rarely very good.
Good heavens! Is marriage so depressing?
I believe marriage is very pleasant, sir. I haven't had much experience of it myself. I have only been married once, and that was because of a misunderstanding between myself and a young person.
I'm not very interested in your family life, Lane.
No, sir. It is not a very interesting subject. I never think of it myself.
That is very understandable. Well, thank you, Lane. Lane's views on marriage seem very casual. Really, if the servants don't set us a good example, what on earth is the use of them? They seem to have no morals.
Mr. Ernest Worthing is here, sir.
How are you, my dear Ernest? What brings you to town?
Oh, pleasure brings me pleasure, of course. What else should bring one anywhere? You're eating, as usual, I see, Algy.
I believe it is normal in good society to have some light refreshment at 5 o'clock. Where have you been since last Thursday?
In the country.
What on earth do you do in the country?
When one is in town, one entertains oneself. When one is in the country, one entertains other people. It is very boring.
And who are the people you entertain?
Oh, neighbours, neighbours.
Have you got nice neighbours in your part of Shropshire?
No, they're all horrid. I never speak to any of them.
You must entertain them very much, then. By the way, Shropshire is where you come from, is it not?
Shropshire? Yes, of course. My dear fellow, why are all these cups here? Why cucumber sandwiches? Why are you being so extravagant? Who is coming to tea?
Oh, just Aunt Augusta and Gwendolyn.
How perfectly delightful.
Yes, but I am afraid Aunt Augusta won't be happy that you're here.
And why is that?
My dear fellow, the way that you flirt with Gwendolyn is perfectly disgraceful. It is almost as bad as the way Gwendolyn flirts with you.
I am in love with Gwendolyn. I have come to town in order to propose marriage to her.
I thought you had come to town for pleasure. I call a marriage proposal business.
How very unromantic you are.
I really don't think proposing is romantic. It is very romantic to be in love. But there is nothing romantic about a proposal. Someone might accept. They usually do, I believe. Then the exciting time is over. The most important thing about romance is the uncertainty. If I ever marry, I'll certainly try to forget that I am married.
I believe you, dear Algy. The divorce court was especially invented for people with memories like yours.
Oh, there is no point in thinking about that. Divorces are made in heaven. Please, don't touch the cucumber sandwiches. They were ordered specially for Aunt Augusta.
Well, you have been eating them all the time.
That is different. She is my aunt. Have some bread and butter. The bread and butter is for Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn loves bread and butter.
And very good bread and butter it is, too.
Well, my dear fellow, you don't need to eat it all. You are behaving as if you are married to her already. But you are not married to her, and I don't think you ever will be.
Why on earth do you say that?
Well, firstly, girls never marry the men they flirt with. They don't think it's the right thing to do.
Oh, that is nonsense.
It isn't. It's true. That's why one sees such a large number of bachelors all over the place. And secondly, I don't give my consent.
Your consent?
Gwendolyn is my cousin, and before I allow you to marry her, you will have to clear up the matter of Cicely.
Cicely? What on earth do you mean, Algy? I don't know anyone called Cicely.
Lane, bring me the cigarette case which Mr. Worthing left last time he dined here.
Yes, sir. Have you had my cigarette case all this time? I wish you had told me. I've been writing letters to the police about it. I nearly offered a large reward.
Well, I wish you would offer a large reward. I'm very poor at the moment.
There is no point in offering a large reward now that you've found it.
I think that is mean of you, Ernest, I must say. However, it doesn't matter. Now I look at the inscription inside, I see that this isn't yours.
Of course it's mine. You have seen me with it 100 times, and you shouldn't be reading what is written inside it. It is very impolite to read a private cigarette case.
Oh, it is ridiculous to have rules about what one should read and what one shouldn't. Most of modern culture depends on reading what one shouldn't read.
I know that, and I am not going to discuss modern culture. I simply want my cigarette case back.
Yes, but this isn't your cigarette case. This cigarette case is a present from someone called Cicely. And you said you don't know anyone called Cicely.
Well, if you want to know, Cicely is my aunt.
Your aunt?
Yes. She is a charming old lady. Just give it back to me, Algy.
But why does she call herself Little Cicely if she is your aunt? From Little Cicely... with all her love.
My dear fellow, some aunts are tall. Some aunts are not tall. My aunt should be allowed to decide her height for herself. You seem to think that every aunt should be like your aunt, Lady Bracknell. That is ridiculous. Now, give me back my cigarette case.
Yes, but why does your aunt call you her uncle? From Little Cicely, with all her love, to her dear Uncle Jack. I don't object to an aunt being a small aunt, but why does an aunt, whatever her size, call her own nephew Uncle? I don't understand. And your name isn't Jack. It is Ernest.
It isn't Ernest. It's Jack.
You have always told me that your name is Ernest. I have introduced you to everyone as Ernest. You answer to the name Ernest. You look as if your name is Ernest. You are the most earnest-looking person I have ever seen in my life. It is perfectly ridiculous to tell me your name isn't Ernest. It is on your visiting cards. Here is one of them. Mr. Ernest Worthing, B4 the Albany, London. I'll keep this as proof that your name is Ernest. Don't ever try to deny it to me or to Gwendolyn or to anyone else.
Well, my name is Ernest in town and Jack in the country. And the cigarette case was given to me in the country.
That does not explain why your small Aunt Cicely calls you her dear uncle. My dear fellow, you had better tell me everything. Go on. I have always suspected that you were a secret Bunburyist, and now I am quite sure.
Bunburyist? What on earth do you mean by a Bunburyist?
I'll tell you the meaning of Bunburyist when you tell me why you are Ernest in town and Jack in the country.
Well, give me my cigarette case first.
Here it is. Now give me your explanation, and please make it unbelievable.
My dear fellow, there is nothing unbelievable about my explanation. In fact, it's perfectly ordinary. I was brought up by an old gentleman called Thomas Cardew. He adopted me when I was a little boy, and he made me the guardian of his granddaughter, Miss Cicely Cardew, in his will. Cicely is my ward and calls me uncle because she respects me, although you wouldn't understand that. You don't understand respect. Cicely lives in my house in the country, and is looked after by her excellent governess, Miss Prism.
Where is your house in the country, by the way?
That is nothing to do with you, my dear fellow. I am not going to invite you there. But I will tell you honestly that the house is not in Shropshire.
I guessed that, my dear fellow. I have Bunburyed all over Shropshire twice. Now, go on. Why are you Ernest in town and Jack in the country?
My dear Algy, I don't know whether you will understand. You are not a very serious person. I will try to explain it to you. I am a responsible guardian, and I have to behave well all the time in the country. It is my duty, but it is not very good for my health or my happiness. So, when I want to leave the country and come to town, I pretend to have a younger brother called Ernest. I tell everyone that he lives in the Albany, and that he gets into the most terrible trouble. That, my dear Algy, is the truth.
You are a Bunburyist. I was right to say you were a Bunburyist. You are one of the most advanced Bunburyists I know.
What on earth do you mean?
You have invented a younger brother called Ernest so that you can come to town as often as you like. I have invented an invalid called Bunbury so that I can go to the country as often as I like. When I pretend to visit him, I call it Bunburying. And I call someone who visits imaginary people a Bunburyist. Bunbury is very valuable. For example, if it wasn't for Bunbury's very bad health, I wouldn't be able to dine with you tonight. I should be dining with Aunt Augusta.
I haven't asked you to dine with me tonight.
I know. You are very careless about sending out invitations. It is very foolish of you. Nothing annoys people more than not receiving invitations.
You ought to dine with your Aunt Augusta.
I don't have any intention of dining with Aunt Augusta. Firstly, I dine there on Monday, and once a week is enough time to spend with one's relations. Secondly, Aunt Augusta will either give me two women to talk to at dinner, or none. And thirdly, I know that tonight she will make me sit next to Mary Farquhar, who always flirts with her own husband across the dinner table. It is not very pleasant. In fact, respectable women should not behave like that. And more women are doing it. The number of women in London who flirt with their own husbands is terrible. It looks so bad. Well, now I know that you are a Bunburyist, I want to talk to you about Bunburying. I want to tell you the rules.
I am not a Bunburyist. If Gwendolyn agrees to marry me, I am going to kill my brother. In fact, I think I will kill him anyway. Cicely is a little too interested in him, so I am going to get rid of Ernest, and I think you should kill Mr. Your invalid friend with the ridiculous name.
Nothing will make me kill Bunbury. And if you ever get married, you will be glad to know Bunbury. A man who marries without knowing Bunbury will have a very boring marriage.
That is nonsense. If I marry a charming girl like Gwendolyn, I certainly won't want to know Bunbury.
Then your wife will want to know him. You don't understand that in married life, three is company and two is none.
Don't try to be cynical. It's perfectly easy to be cynical.
My dear fellow, it isn't easy to be anything these days. There is so much competition. Ah, that must be Aunt Augusta. Only relatives ring like that. Now, I will take her out of the room for 10 minutes so that you can propose to Gwendolyn. So, I can dine with you tonight, can't I?
I suppose so, if you want to.
Good.
Lady Bracknell and Miss Fairfax are here, sir.
Good afternoon, dear Algernon. I hope you are behaving very well.
I'm feeling very well, Aunt Augusta.
Feeling very well is not the same as behaving very well. In fact, the two things rarely go together.
Good heavens, You are smart.
I am always smart, aren't I, Mr. Worthing?
You are quite perfect, Miss Fairfax.
Oh, I hope I am not perfect. There would be no room for development, and I intend to develop in every direction. I am sorry if we are a little late, Algernon, but I had to visit Lady Harbury. I hadn't seen her since her poor husband died. She has changed very much. She looks quite 20 years younger. And now I'll have a cup of tea and one of those nice cucumber sandwiches you promised me.
Certainly, Aunt Augusta.
Will you come and sit here, Gwendolen? Thanks, Mama. I'm quite comfortable over here.
Good heavens! Lane! Why are there no cucumber sandwiches? I ordered them specially.
There were no cucumbers in the market this morning, sir. I went there twice.
No cucumbers?
No, sir.
Thank you, Lane. You may go.
Thank you, sir.
I am very upset that there were no cucumbers, Aunt Augusta.
It doesn't matter, Algernon. I had some crumpets with Lady Harbury.
I hear that her hair has turned quite blonde from grief.
It certainly has changed its colour. I do not know why, of course. Thank you. I've got quite a treat for you at dinner tonight, Algernon. I am going to seat you next to Mary Farquhar. She is such a nice woman, and she is so sweet to her husband. It's delightful to watch them.
I am afraid, Aunt Augusta, I cannot dine with you tonight, after all.
I hope you can, Algernon. There will be 13 people at the dining table if you aren't there. That is unlucky. Your uncle will have to eat upstairs. Fortunately, he often has to do that.
It is terribly disappointing to me, but I've had a telegram to say that my poor friend Bunbury is very ill again. They think I should be with him.
It is very strange. Mr. Bunbury seems to suffer from very bad health.
Yes, indeed. He is a permanent invalid.
Well, Algernon, I think it's about time that Mr. Bunbury decides whether he is going to live or die. I don't sympathize with invalids. Illness should not be encouraged in others. One should be healthy. Could you ask Mr. Bunbury not to be ill on Saturday? I am holding a reception, and I want you to organize the music. People talk during performances of music, and I want to encourage them to talk, particularly since it is the end of the London season and they have nearly run out of things to say.
I'll speak to Bunbury, Aunt Augusta, if he is still conscious. I think I can promise you that he will be well by Saturday. Of course, the music is a problem. You see, if one plays good music, people don't listen. And if one plays bad music, people don't talk. But I will show you the programme of music I have chosen, if you will come into the music room for a moment.
Thank you, Algernon. It is very thoughtful of you.
It's been a charming day, Miss Fairfax.
Please don't talk about the weather, Mr. Worthing. When people talk to me about the weather, I always feel quite certain they mean something else, and I get nervous.
I do mean something else.
I thought so. In fact, I am never wrong.
I would like to talk to you about the something else while Lady Bracknell is out of the room.
Then talk about it quickly. Mama often comes back into a room suddenly.
Miss Fairfax, ever since I met you, I have admired you more than any girl I have met ever since I met you.
Yes, I am quite well aware of that. I was always fascinated by you, even before I met you. We live in an age of ideals. Any expensive monthly magazine will tell you that. And my ideal has always been to love someone called Ernest. When Algernon mentioned he had a friend called Ernest,
I knew I would love you.
Do you really love me, Gwendolyn?
Very much.
Darling, you don't know how happy you have made me.
My own Ernest.
But could you love me if my name wasn't Ernest?
But your name is Ernest.
Yes, I know it is. But what if it was something else? Couldn't you love me then?
Ah, but you are called Ernest, so there is no reason to think about you not being called Ernest.
Personally, darling, I don't really like the name Ernest. I don't think the name suits me.
It suits you perfectly. It is a wonderful name. It is musical.
Well, really, Gwendolyn, I think there are a lot of nicer names. I think that Jack, for instance, is a charming name.
Jack. No, there is very little music in the name Jack. It does not excite me. I have known several Jacks, and they were all very ordinary. I feel pity for any woman who is married to a man called Jack. I think the only really good name is Ernest.
Gwendolyn, I must get baptized at once. I mean, we must get married at once. There is no time to lose.
Married, Mr. Worthing?
Well, you know that I love you, and you told me, Miss Fairfax, that you love me.
I do love you, but you haven't proposed to me yet. Nothing has been said about marriage.
Well, may I propose to you now?
I think that this would be an excellent time to propose to me, and I will tell you now that I will accept you so that you aren't worried.
Gwendolyn!
Yes, Mr. Worthing. What are you going to say to me?
You know what I am going to say to you.
Yes, but you haven't said it.
Gwendolyn, will you marry me?
Yes, of course I will. You have taken a long time to ask. I am afraid you have had very little experience of proposing.
My dear, I have never loved anyone in the world but you.
Yes, but men often practice proposing. My brother, Gerald, often proposes to people. All my friends tell me. Oh, what wonderful blue eyes you have, Ernest. They are quite, quite blue. I hope you will always look at me like that, especially when there are other people in the room.
Mr. Worthing, get up from that position. It is not respectable to behave like that.
Mama! Please go away. Mr. Worthing has not finished yet.
Finished what, may I ask?
I am engaged to be married to Mr. Worthing, Mama.
Pardon me, you are not engaged to anyone, Gwendolyn. When you are engaged to someone, I or your father will inform you of the fact. An engagement should come as a surprise to a young girl. A pleasant surprise or an unpleasant surprise. It is not something that she is allowed to arrange for herself. And now, I have a few questions to ask you, Mr. Worthing. While I am asking these questions, you, Gwendolyn, will wait for me in the carriage.
Mama!
Wait in the carriage, Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn, I said wait for me in the carriage.
Yes, Mama.
You can sit down, Mr. Worthing.
Thank you, Lady Bracknell. I prefer to stand.
I must tell you that you are not on my list of eligible young men, although I have the same list as the Duchess of Bolton. We work together during the season. However, I am quite ready to add your name to the list if your answers are satisfactory. Do you smoke?
Well, yes, I do smoke.
I am glad to hear it. A man should always have an occupation. There are far too many men in London who don't have an occupation. How old are you?
29.
That's a very good age to get married. I have always believed that a man who wants to get married should know everything or nothing. Which do you know?
I know nothing, Lady Bracknell.
I am pleased to hear it. I approve of ignorance. I don't approve of modern education. Fortunately, in England at least, education has no effect at all. What is your income?
It's between 7,000 and 8,000 pounds a year.
Do you earn this income from land that you own or from investments?
From investments.
That is satisfactory. Owning land is neither profitable nor pleasurable. It costs money to look after it when one is alive, and then there are taxes when one is dead. That's all I can say about land.
I have a country house with some land, but I don't depend upon it for my income.
A country house? How many bedrooms? Well, that doesn't matter. I hope you have a house in town. Gwendolyn must have a house in town.
Well, I do have a townhouse in Belgrave Square, but it is rented to Lady Bloxham.
Lady Bloxham? I don't know her.
Oh, she doesn't go out very much. She's very old.
She's not necessarily respectable, even if she is old. What number, Belgrave Square?
149.
But that is the unfashionable side of the street. However, that could easily be changed.
Do you mean the fashion or the side?
Both, if necessary. Now, let us discuss less important details. Are your parents living?
I have lost both my parents.
To lose one parent, Mr. Worthing, is unfortunate. To lose both seems like carelessness. Who was your father? He must have been a wealthy man. Was he a businessman or an aristocrat?
I am afraid I don't know. Lady Bracknell, I said that I had lost my parents. In fact, my parents lost me. I don't know who I am. I was found.
Found?
The late Mr. Thomas Cardew, a very kind and charitable old gentleman, found me and called me Worthing, because he had a train ticket for Worthing in his pocket at the time. Worthing is a seaside town.
Where did the kind gentleman who had a train ticket for this seaside town find you?
In a handbag.
A handbag?
Yes, Lady Bracknell. I was in a handbag. A large black leather handbag. An ordinary handbag with handles.
Where did Mr. Thomas Cardew find this ordinary handbag?
In the cloakroom at Victoria Station, here in London. It was a mistake. It was given to him instead of his own bag.
In the cloakroom at Victoria Station?
Yes.
Mr. Worthing, I am shocked by what you have just told me. I do not think it is right to be born in a handbag, even if it has handles. And I do not think it is right to be found in a handbag, in a cloakroom, at a railway station. It is not the way to become a respectable gentleman with a good position in society.
What is your advice, Lady Bracknell? I would, of course, do anything to make Gwendolyn happy.
My advice to you, Mr. Worthing, is this. Try to find some relations as soon as possible, and try to find at least one parent.
Well, I don't see how I could possibly do that. I can show you the handbag. It is in a wardrobe at home. I really think that should satisfy you, Lady Bracknell.
Me, sir? It has nothing to do with me. Do you really think that Lord Bracknell would allow our only daughter to marry the son of a cloakroom and form a relationship with a piece of luggage? Goodbye, Mr. Worthing.
Goodbye.
Pom 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 pom.
Stop singing that awful tune, Algy. Didn't everything work out all right, old fellow? Did Gwendolyn refuse to marry you?
Oh, Gwendolyn was fine. She believes we are engaged. Her mother is awful. I've never met such a monster. Oh, I beg your pardon, Algy. I suppose I shouldn't talk about your own aunt in that way in front of you.
My dear fellow, I love hearing people being rude about my relations. Relations are simply a boring group of people who don't know how to live and don't know when to die.
Oh, that is nonsense.
It isn't.
Well, I won't argue about it. You always want to argue about things.
Things were made for arguing about.
If I believed that, I'd shoot myself. You don't think Gwendolen will become like her mother in 150 years, do you, Algy?
All women become like their mothers. That is their tragedy. No men become like theirs. That is their tragedy.
Have you said something clever?
They were very fine sentences, and they are very true.
I'm tired of cleverness. Everybody is clever nowadays. You meet clever people everywhere. I wish that there were a few fools left in the world.
There are.
I should like to meet them. What do they talk about?
The fools. They talk about the clever people, of course.
What fools?
By the way, did you tell Gwendolen the truth about being Ernest in town and Jack in the country?
My dear fellow, one does not tell the truth to a nice, sweet girl. You have extraordinary ideas about how to behave to a woman.
The only way to behave to a woman is to flirt with her if she is pretty, and if she isn't pretty, you must flirt with someone else.
Oh, that is nonsense.
What about your badly behaved brother, Ernest? Did you tell her about him?
Oh, I shall have got rid of him before the end of the week. I'll say he died in Paris of a heart attack. Lots of people die of a heart attack quite suddenly, don't they?
Yes, but it's hereditary, my dear fellow. It's the sort of thing that runs in families. You would better say that he died of a bad cold.
Are you sure that a bad cold isn't hereditary?
Of course it isn't.
Very well, then. My poor brother Ernest will die suddenly in Paris of a bad cold. That gets rid of him.
But you said that your ward, Miss Cardew, was a little too interested in your poor brother Ernest. Won't she be very distressed?
Oh, that's not a problem. Cicely is not a silly romantic girl, I am pleased to say. She eats big meals, goes for long walks, and doesn't pay attention to her lessons.
I would like to meet Cicely.
I will make sure that you never meet her. She is extremely pretty, and she is just 18.
Have you told Gwendolen that you have an extremely pretty ward who is just 18?
Oh, one mustn't tell people everything all at once. Cicely and Gwendolen will be great friends, I'm sure. They will be calling each other sister half an hour after they meet.
Women only call each other sister after they have called each other lots of other things first. Now, my dear fellow, if we want to get a good table at the restaurant, we must go and change our clothes now. It's nearly 7. I'm hungry.
I never knew a time when you weren't hungry.
What shall we do after dinner? Go to a theatre?
Oh, no. One has to listen at the theatre. I hate listening.
Well, let us go to the club.
Oh, no. One has to talk at the club. I hate talking.
Well, we could go to the Empire Music Hall at 10.
The Music Hall? Oh, no. I hate looking at things.
Well, what shall we do?
Nothing.
Doing nothing is very hard work. However, I don't mind very hard work if there is nothing definite to do.
Miss Fairfax has returned, sir.
Gwendolen, hello.
Algy, please go away. I have something which I want to say to Mr. Worthing in private.
Really, Gwendolen, I don't think I can allow you to do that.
Algy, you are not quite old enough to say things like that.
My own darling.
Ernest, we may never be married. I saw the frown on Mama's face. Few parents these days pay attention to what their children say to them. I was 3 years old the last time I had any influence over my mother. Ernest, she may stop us from getting married. I may get married to someone else. I may get married again and again. but nothing will ever change my love for you.
Dear Gwendolyn.
Mama told me the romantic story of your birth. She is displeased about it, but I love it. Your name, Ernest, fascinates me. You are so simple and good-natured, and that makes you wonderfully complicated. I've got your town address at the Albany. What is your address in the country?
The Manor House, Woolton, Hertfordshire.
It may be necessary to do something impetuous. We will have to think carefully about this. I will write to you every day.
My own one.
How long will you be in town?
Till Monday.
Good. Algy, you may turn round now.
Thanks, I have turned round already.
You may also ring the bell for Lane to take me to the door.
Let me take you to the door, my own darling.
Certainly.
I will take Miss Fairfax to the door. Yes, sir.
Bring me a glass of wine, Lane.
Yes, sir.
Tomorrow, Lane, I'm going bunburying.
Yes, sir.
I shall probably not be back till Monday. Pack my evening clothes, some casual clothes, and all my Bunbury suits.
Yes, sir.
I hope that tomorrow is a fine day, Lane.
It never is, sir.
Lane, you are a pessimist.
I do my best, sir. What a sensible, intelligent girl. The only girl I've ever cared for in my life. What on earth are you laughing at?
I'm a bit worried about poor Bunbury, that is all.
Your friend Bunbury will get you into trouble one day, you know.
I love trouble. It's the only thing which is never serious.
Oh, that's nonsense, Algy. You never talk anything but nonsense.
Nobody ever does.